the beginning of Nectar Devotion is the introduction. In the introduction, Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he gives a definition of what is bhakti. That's what we're trying to be as devotees or bhaktas. So he quotes a verse, and the verse is this verse: Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyana vritam anukulyena krishnanu shilinam bhakti uttamam. So he gives this as a verse as a definition of uttama bhakti, pure devotional service. Prabhupada uses the term pure devotional service, and Sanskrit is uttama bhakti. And this is actually is the most important verse in the Nectar Devotion. The whole Nectar Devotion expands from this verse. On page Roman numeral 21, Prabhupada gives this definition. He says that he translates this verse on Yavilashita Shunyam like this: first class devotional service is known by one's tendency to be fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, serving the Lord favorably. So in our notes, we have collected some notes on this most important verse in the Nectar Devotion. So cultivation of activities. There's another translation that can be given here. One acharya says, the cultivation of activities which are meant exclusively for the pleasure of Krishna. And these activities are performed through all the actions or endeavors of the body, mind, and speech. And all such actions are not covered by jnana, which means philosophical pursuits or knowledge aimed at impersonal liberation. And these activities of service or pleasing Krishna, they're not covered by karma, which means fruit of pursuits or reward-seeking activities. In other words, we're doing bhakti because we want to get something from the Lord. That's called karma mishra bhakti or jnana mishra bhakti. This is not uttam bhakti. This is not pure bhakti. This is mixed bhakti. So he's saying that pure bhakti is not covered. Anavritam. Avritam means covered. Anavritam means not covered. It's not covered or mixed up with these things. It's just for Krishna's pleasure. Nothing for me. So such activities are not, they're unselfish, they're selfless, and are free from any ulterior motive, and they're devoid of all desires and the aspiration of bringing happiness to Krishna. So Rupa Goswami, he breaks this verse down into two sections. This most important verse, which defines uttama bhakti. In other words, we're devotees, we're trying to practice pure devotion. Because in Goloka Vrindavan, Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, Radharani, the Sakis, Sri Ram, Subhava, everyone is a pure devotee. We see that they're all pure devotees. That means that they're uttam bhaktas, they're nitya siddhas, they're all practicing pure devotional service. So we're practicing devotional service, but it's not perfect, it's not pure. And that's why we're not experiencing the greatest happiness. And that's sometimes we remember Krishna, sometimes we forget him. So it's very important to define the object, to define what we are trying to achieve. So he begins the book, this is verse 11 in the book. There's hundreds and hundreds of verses in Nectar Devotion. So many hundreds of verses. So in verse 11, after his Mangalacharna, the auspicious prayers of invocation, to begin the book, then he defines, okay, this book is called Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It is the ocean of nectarine mellows of bhakti. Okay, well, what is bhakti? Oh, you're a bhakta. Oh, yes, I'm a Krishna bhakta. I'm practicing bhakti. Oh, what is bhakti? Oh, bhakti is playing guitar and this and that. So we have to have an understanding. What is pure bhakti? Uttam. There's Kanishta Bhakti, Madhyam Bhakti, and Uttam Bhakti. So Uttam Bhakti is the goal, that is the destination. So it has different characteristics, different symptoms. So this verse by Rupa Goswami can be broken down into what they call in Sanskrit Swarup Lakshana, which is primary characteristics or chief characteristics, and Tatashta. Tatashta Lakshana means the secondary characteristics or the extrinsic. So the Swarup Lakshana, the primary characteristics, are in the first, the second line. The second line is the Suplakshana. Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhata Uttamam. These two symptoms are the sort of lakshana, primary characters. Anukul, it's favorable. Krishnanu Shilanam, and it's done for Krishna's pleasure. And then the first line, Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karna Vyanavritam, that is the Tattva Lakshana. In other words, that's what is not bhakti. These activities are not bhakti. And the first one are bhakti. So just to explain, Suplakshana, the term Suplakshana means that which describes the fundamental nature of an object or person. That is, Suplakshana means the characteristics, the primary characteristics. So in this verse there's two symptoms of Uttama Bhakti. One is the primary, one is the secondary. One, the verse describes what is bhakti and what isn't bhakti. This is bhakti and this isn't. Right? So now in this Suplakshana, there are three subheadings, three primary characteristics. One is that devotional service, Uttam Bhakti, is for Krishna. And two is that Uttam Bhakti is active. It's an active engagement. And three, Uttama Bhakti, or pure devotional service, is performed with a favorable intention, mood, and it's agreeable to Krishna's desire. So we'll hear about those. First of all, that the primary characteristic of Uttam Bhakti is that it is bhakti is for Krishna. Sometimes people say, you should be devoted to your country. You should be devoted to your family. You should be devoted to your wife. You should be devoted to your business. You should be devoted to... Oh, he's a Shiv Bhakta. He's a Surya Bhakta. He's a Durga Bhakta. But this really is not bhakti. This pure bhakti, Uttam Bhakti, is only for Krishna. And this is the most essential. This is the most, of all the primary characteristics, this is the most essential characteristic of Uttama Bhakti, that it's for Krishna. The pure devotional service is for Krishna and not anyone else. You know, there's no such thing as saying, I'm a Shiva Bhakta. You may be worshipping Shiva because you want something. You want money, position, fame, protection. But devotees of Krishna, they don't want anything. We just want to love Krishna. Love for love's sake. It's not a business transaction. I love you, I scratch your back, you scratch my back. I satisfy your senses, you satisfy mine. You make me happy, I make you happy. This is business. This is not love, this is exploitation. So bhakti is something, really bhakti is only for Krishna because it's totally selfless. So this is the first characteristic. It's only for Krishna. So Krishna is the subject, which in Sanskrit means Vishaya. Vishaya and Ashraya. The subject of bhakti is Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, which means the supreme form of Godhead, Rajendranandan. Rajendranandan means the son of the king of Vraj. In other words, the son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna. And then Krishna includes all the avatars because Krishna is known as Sarva Avatari. So Krishna includes, when we worship Rajendranandan or Yashodanandan or Govinda or Gopinath, that includes Krishna of Mathura and Krishna of Dwarka and all the Narayan incarnations, all the Das avatars, all the different forms of Vishnu and Vaikuntha. They're all included in Krishna, all the other Vishnu Tattva expansions. So that's the first and most important of all the Suplakshana of Uttama Bhakti, that it's for Krishna. And the second is that it's an active engagement. So this is the meaning of the word. We say Anukulyena Krishnanu Anushilanam. So Anushilanam, this word Anushilanam, means it's active, it's an active engagement. It's a cultivation. In other words, it's cultivation, it's practice of activities which involve the body, the mind, and the words. In other words, we act, with our words we act for Krishna, with our body we act for Krishna, with our mind we think of Krishna, thinking, feeling, and willing. In the Nectar Devotion Introduction page, Roman numeral 21, Prabhupada says, Anushilanam means cultivation by following the predecessor teachers, the acharyas. That means by cultivation we must refer to activity. Without activity, consciousness alone cannot help us. So anu means to follow, like we say, Sakhi Anugata means to follow in the footsteps of the Sakhis, or Anusharan and Anukaran. So Anushilanam means to follow the parampara, follow the guru acharyas. So Prabhupada mentions, or rather Rupa Goswami mentions, there are two aspects of this Anushilanam, which is a primary characteristic of Uttam Bhakti. One is called pravritti and nivritti. Prabhupada translates pravritti and nivritti as positive and negative action. So pravritti, this means pursuing activities which are favorable to Krishna consciousness, and nivritti means avoiding activities which are unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. So it's like accepting and rejecting. Accept what is good. So now Prabhupada explains here in his Nectar Devotion that this anushilanam, or cultivation of Uttam Bhakti in terms of pravritti, positive action, includes the acting in Krishna consciousness with the body, the mind, and the speech. Then he explains a little bit about this predecessor acharyas, the word anushilanam, Krishna anushilanam, Bhakti Uttama. So shilanam refers to the Guru Parampara. So this pure devotional service is only possible by the mercy of Krishna and his devotees. Because bhakti is actually a function of Krishna's sarup shakti. Bhakti is an energy. It's a shakti. It's a potency. And it's not material. There's nothing to do. It's not like, oh, he has devotion, for he's very devoted to his school or to his job or to his family. So just as he's devoted to his family, you can also be devoted to Krishna. It's not like that. These are all material objects of our affection. And we say devotion. But real bhakti is a spiritual function. It's an expansion of Krishna's personal sarup shakti, spiritual energy. So our body is material. It's made of material elements: earth, water, fire, bones, muscle. It's made out of earth and minerals and vitamins and proteins, all these things. So it's not spiritual. So it's very interesting how this happens, that by linking up with the parampara, then the spiritual energy descends. Just like electricity comes from the powerhouse, comes from the atomic reactor, and it's transferred to the electric wires, and it comes to the pole, then it comes to our house, and we connect in our house with the supply of electricity, then we get heating and cooling and air conditioners and refrigerators and televisions and radios and toasters and all these things, because we're connected with the flow of electricity. So by initiation we become connected with the flow of spiritual energy known as Swarup Shakti. And then we can actually perform bhakti. So Prabhupada explains that here on page... he says that pure devotional service is only possible by the mercy of Krishna and his devotees. Yasya prasada, bhagavat prasada. Yasya prasada, nagati gatopi. Without initiation and linking in the disciplic succession, one cannot connect his activities to Krishna. So there's one little passage here in Prabhupada's introduction on page 22. The connection with the spiritual master is called initiation. From the date of initiation, or mantra diksha, by the spiritual master, the connection between Krishna and a person cultivating Krishna consciousness is established. Without initiation by a bona fide spiritual master, the actual connection with Krishna consciousness is never performed. In other words, we perform devotional service by following a spiritual master who himself is following the Guru Parampara. I'm following or trying to follow Srila Prabhupada, and he's following Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and he's following Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, and he's following his guru, his Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru, his line of Diksha Gurus goes up to Veer Chandra, then to Jalavamata, then to Nityananda. Nityananda is none other than Balaram. And Balaram is none other than Anangamanjari. And Anangamanjari is none other than Radharani's younger sister. And Radharani is nothing but the expansion of Krishna's Ladini Shakti. So in this way, this is Guru Parampara, the Diksha Parampara, then the Shiksha Parampara. Bhakti Sunata Saraswati is following Gaura Kishore, and Gaura Kishore is following the style and presentation of pure bhakti of Bhaktivinoda, and Bhaktivinoda is presenting the pure bhakti of Jagannath Das Babaji, and Jagannath Das Babaji is presenting the pure bhakti of Krishna's Kaviraj, and so is Damodar Goswami and Rupa Goswami, etc. So the guru is following the guru parampara, and they are following Krishna's orders. Therefore, initiation of the spiritual master, it ensures the purity and selflessness in our service. Without initiation, we cannot connect with Krishna and know exactly what we should do to please him. So I mentioned in a few minutes before about this Sarup Shakti. So this Krishna Anushilanam, or Bhakti, is a special function. It's considered to be a vritti, or a special function of vritti of Krishna's Sarup Shakti, his internal energy. So the Prabhupada mentions the same point in his own words in Roman numeral 22, Nectar Devotion Introduction. He says, any activities done in bhakti or devotional service in Krishna consciousness are directly under control of the spiritual energy. In other words, energy, so this spiritual energy is the internal energy of Krishna, the Antaranga Shakti, which technically is called Swarup Shakti. The Swarup is the personal form, the energy of Krishna's personal body. In other words, energy is a sort of strength, and this strength can be spiritualized by the mercy of both the bona fide spiritual master and Krishna. So we have energy. I have energy. I have the strength to walk up the stairs and pick up different objects, and to walk and to run, and the strength to speak and to execute different activities like painting or writing or playing sports. So this is energy. But this energy and this body are material. It's material energy. We're using it in material ways. So somehow we have to transform our material energy into spiritual energy. So that's done by the initiation process. Because we are material, but the guru is spiritual because he's connected to the spiritual energy, that spiritual electricity which is coming down from Krishna through the parampara, which is known as Shilanam, Anushilanam. So what it says here is that the body, the mind, and the senses of the conditioned soul are all unconscious and dull matter. The Sarup Shakti, or internal spiritual energy of Krishna, cannot manifest there. In other words, fire and water don't mix. So we have to become, to enter fire, we must become fire. So the body is material, and Krishna is spiritual, and Krishna is served by spiritual personalities, and Krishna is served by spiritual energy. Ladini Shakti is spiritual. Sandini Shakti is spiritual. Sandit Shakti is spiritual. But we're Jada Shakti. We're Maya Shakti. We're material. So we're not compatible. We're incompatible. We're the opposite. We're matter and Krishna's spirit. So how do we transform ourselves? So that transformation process is through the initiation process. To a mystical transformation. So, but due to the causeless mercy of Sri Krishna and Guru, the Sarup Shakti of the Lord identifies with the body, with the material body, mind, and words of the devotee, or that person who takes shelter of Sri Gurudev. So, this identification process in Sanskrit is called Tadatma. T-A-D, long A, Atma, long A-T-M-A, Tadatma, or Tadatmika, is that we take our body and our mind and we combine it with Krishna's body and mind through service, through surrender, through diksha, and then when we identify our body, Jivara Sarupaya, Krishna or Nichidas, that my Jivara Sarupaya, my Swarup, My swoop is not this material body. I'm American, I'm Russian, I'm man, I'm woman, I'm young and old. My swoop is Krishna Das, the my Jivara swoop. The form of my jiva, my atma, my very self, is I am a serving particle. I am consciousness. I am part of the Lord, and I'm meant to serve Him. When we identify with that, it's called tadatmika or tadatma. So then that merging of identities, that by when we contact that spiritual identity, contact the spiritual body of the Lord, contact the spiritual mind of the Lord, contact the spiritual words of the Lord and energy of the Lord, then we become transformed. So the very nice analogy is used. And then when we become transformed, our body starts, although it looks like the same material body, and we're still speaking words, and we still have a mind, and our mind is still thinking, feeling, willing. Now it is thinking and feeling, willing spiritually. And our body is acting spiritually, so it's called spiritualized. You've heard this. Krishna consciousness is a process of spiritualizing the mind, spiritualizing the words, and spiritualizing the body. So that's done by identifying with Krishna and identifying with the Guru. Yes, I am Guru Das. I am Krishna Das. I surrender. Sharanagati Prabhu. O Prabhu, Sharanagati, I surrender to you. Guru Parashraya, I take shelter of the lotus feet of Guru. Aham Brahmasmi, I am spirit, I am Brahman, and I am meant to serve Krishna. So the analogy is used as like an iron rod when a piece of steel or iron is put into fire. After some time, then that fire identifies with the iron rod. Although fire is distinct and separate, it is fire, it is a different energy than the iron rod. It is burning light and burning fire, and the iron rod is still iron. But that by association, because the iron rod is associating and it's submerged and merged in that fire becomes taratma, or taratmika, that fire identifies, that iron rod identifies with the fire, and now they're inseparable. The fire is surrounding the iron rod, and the iron rod becomes fireized. So now, because the iron rod is identifying with the fire, you take the iron rod out of the fire, that iron rod can now go and burn something, isn't it? Because it's red hot. Although it's an iron rod, but because it's so much identified and so much merged with the fire, covered and immersed in the fire, you go in touch with a piece of paper, and immediately the paper springs into fire. Or you touch it to some wood, and the wood starts burning. You see? So this is a very nice analogy. Then if you take the iron rod out of the fire and leave it for some time, separate it from the fire, you put it in cold water, then it's just a cold piece of steel. It can't do anything. You touch it, it doesn't burn you, it doesn't hurt you, it has no burning effect, has no burning power. It resumes its original nature, which was black. It's black in color, it's cold, it's dull matter, it has no power to burn, no brilliance, no light, no color. But when it's merged, when it's tadatmika with the fire, it has color, it's yellow and brilliant red, it has power, it has potency, it has effulgence, it has heat, it has light, and it can do so many things and create so much effect, it can burn a whole house down, burn down a whole town, burn down a whole country. One little iron rod can burn a whole country, right? So in the same way, a devotee, he has a material body, a material mind, material world, words, but when he takes initiation and he's connected with that spiritual energy, that Swarup Shakti of the Lord, then he becomes spiritualized. So he becomes empowered. He becomes Shakti Avesh. He becomes an Avesh. He becomes absorbed in the Krishna Shakti. Kali Kaler Dharma Krishnanam Sankirtan Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartan. In Kali Yuga, the Kali Kaler Dharma Yuga, this is in Kali, the Dharma for Kali Yuga is Nam Sankirtan. And if one has Krishna Shakti, then he can establish this Krishna Dharma, this Nam Sankirtan all over the world. But if he doesn't have Shakti, he can't do anything. Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartan. Vina is without Shakti. So this is the transformation process begins with initiation and absorption in Krishna's service. So the fire identifies with the iron rod and acts to burn through the agency of the rod. The conditioned soul, senses, body and mind become spiritualized or capable of performing bhakti or rendering devotional service to the supreme spiritual person, Sri Krishna. So the conclusion of this discussion of this particular quality. This is a second characteristic or sort of lakshana of Uttama Bhakti, which is that devotional service is an active engagement, that it's anushilanam, acting in Krishna consciousness with the body, mind, and speech. And the first point is that devotional service is only for Krishna. The conclusion is the energy and inspiration to perform devotional service transpires or comes from Krishna. They originate, this energy and inspiration originate from Krishna's internal spiritual potency, which is called Sarup Shakti. It flows down through the disciplic succession, and then it is instilled in our hearts by the spiritual master. By following a bona fide spiritual master, we link our energies and activities to Krishna's internal energy, which is this linking process or identification of our body, mind, and words with Krishna's spiritual energy and Krishna's will and Krishna's service, called Tadatma, obtaining identification with. Thus, our body, minds, and words become spiritualized. And Prabhupada gives a conclusion to this. Then he says, in other words, energy is a sort of strength, and this strength can be spiritualized by the mercy of both the bona fide spiritual master and Krishna. So, and again, discussing Surup Lakshana of Uttam Bhakti, the third characteristic or primary characteristic of is Anukulyena. This Anushilana means to act for the pleasure of Krishna, and then this means to be favorable intention. Anukul means favorable. And Prabhupada describes that on page 23 of the introduction. He says, devotional service means to practice Krishna conscious activities which are favorable to the transcendental pleasure of the Supreme Lord. Because later we'll hear how someone may please the Lord. He may be acting to please the Lord, but it's not bhakti. Someone might say, wait a minute, he's pleasing the Lord, it should be bhakti. So one characteristic is, yes, it pleases the Lord. That's one characteristic, main characteristic, primary Swarup Lakshana. But another characteristic, it must be the one who's doing that action must have a favorable intention, must have a favorable motivation, must have a loving mood. And we'll find out. This is a little bit of a tricky point. We have to pay attention. Someone might say, oh, he's pleasing Krishna, but is it bhakti? Or someone may not be pleasing Krishna, but it's bhakti. We can also find out that. When you see someone's not pleasing Krishna, but it's actually devotion, it's uttam bhakti. And then we'll hear an example of that. So this requires some vichara. This is, vichara means consideration. So now, the third characteristic is anukulyena, which means favorable intention. So far, Rupa Goswami, in his introduction of defining, giving the definition of what is pure bhakti, what is pure devotional service, what is uttam, the topmost bhakti, which we're all striving for, he says that devotional service, he's defined devotional service as activity for Krishna's pleasure. In other words, acting for Krishna's pleasure with body, mind, and words. This is anushilanam. However, sometimes Krishna derives pleasure from fighting with demons. So it would be absurd to say that the demons are practicing bhakti. So therefore, a further qualification of devotional service in the definition that Rupa Goswami gives is what before he said it should be anushilanam, be pleasing to Krishna. But he gives a further definition by saying that, qualifying the word uttama bhakti by saying anukulyena, which means favorable intention. In other words, when Krishna was in Mathura at Kamsa's wrestling arena, there was these huge wrestlers. Krishna and Balaram at this time, they were about 10 years old, 10 and a half years old. They were young boys. They lived in Vrindavan for about 10 years and 9 months. Then Krishna went to Mathura. So there are these full-grown wrestlers of 35 years old. They were 2 meters tall, 100 kilos. You know, rippling muscles like Mr. World or Mr. Weightlifter, and, you know, huge bodies, superhero bodies, Chandra Mushtika. So when these wrestlers were striking Krishna's limbs with their thunderbolt crashing arms, it gave Krishna great happiness. He enjoyed it. Why? Because he was tasting Vira Ras. Vira Ras is one of the Gona Rasas, secondary Rasas. Vira means heroism, to get in a good fight. If you're very strong and you know your limits and you're fighting a good opponent who's giving you a good fight, then you feel, oh, this is good. You're getting excited. This is a ras, this is a pleasure, it's a type of happiness, one of the flavors of life. To give variety is a mother of enjoyment. So externally it appears that striking the Lord is pleasing Krishna. But because it's being done maliciously, with the intention of killing Krishna, it is not bhakti. So Krishna is taking pleasure from it. So Krishna is pleased by it. But the person who is giving Krishna pleasure, Krishna may be getting pleased, but they're thinking, I want to kill him. Their motivation is not to love Krishna, they're not trying to please Krishna, they're trying to kill him. And their motivation or intention is not to make him happy and to please him, but to kill him. Krishna may be taking pleasure, but their intention is to kill him. Prabhupada tells one story about some boys were coming home from school, and there was one lake, and there's some frogs sitting on a lily pad, leaf of a lily called lily pad, and that's on the waters, and the frog is light, so he can sit there on top of the water and bask in the sun. And then the boy says, oh, look at those frogs, let's play a game and try to hit those frogs with stones. So the boys were taking stones and throwing at the frog, trying to hit them and make them jump off the leaf. And the frogs they didn't want to go off the leaf. It was cold water and they were in the sun. So they were ducking their heads and they were getting hit by the stones. And then the one frog, he said to the boys, hey, boys, why are you throwing these stones? And then the boy said, oh, we're only having fun. We're just having fun throwing stones at you. And then the frog said, yes, but your fun is my death. You're having fun, but I'm getting killed. So it's fun for you and it's death for me. So this is an idea, this same thing here that Rupa Goswami is explaining, that bhakti must be not only the anushilanam, then for Krishna's pleasure, but it must be favorable intention, anukulyena. One must have a favorable, loving mood. Not, oh, Krishna may be getting pleased. So the boys are getting pleased by throwing the rocks, but the frogs are saying, you're killing us, stop it. So the demons, and wrestlers and others, they're trying to kill Krishna. Krishna may derive pleasure from him because he has, he tries to get pleasure. He's a rasaraj. He's a Leela Purushottam. He finds pleasure in everything. But that doesn't mean that it's actually bhakti. So this is the analogy that they give. So now, on another side, here's another analogy of an action where Krishna is displeased, but it's actually uttam bhakti, which I mentioned earlier. Someone acts in such a way that displeases Krishna. So the example is none other than Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda was sitting with baby Krishna, and she was giving her breast to him and feeding her breast milk. And he was relishing very much, drinking her breast milk and feeling very satisfied and nourished, and very, very sweet taste. But then Mother Yashoda noticed on the stove that her milk was boiling over. So, wow, the milk is boiling over. So she immediately put down to take care of the milk on the stove. And Krishna became very upset. He bit his lower lip and he started crying. Arr! And then he became angry and he picked up a stick and he just broke the butter pot, broke the yogurt pot, and the yogurt went all over the floor. He didn't eat any of it. He just out of anger. So someone might say, oh, Mother Yashoda's actions are, she's not a devotee. Mother Yashoda is not devoted to Krishna. She didn't please Krishna. She didn't do anushilanam. But we have to see, what is her intention? What was her mood? And so what was her mood? Her mood was that this milk, she didn't go for sense gratification. The milk on the stove, she was thinking, oh, I'm boiling this milk on the stove so I can make sweet rice for Krishna tonight. Because I know it, when he comes back from cow herding, after he goes out in the morning, he'll be so hungry that he'll want to have the sweet rice. So I want to make a very nice sweet for Krishna, for his pleasure. So my intention is for the happiness of Krishna, for the pleasure of Krishna. I'm doing this act, putting him down to go for his pleasure. I'm putting him down. So I'm trying to please him by this future act of saving that milk from getting burned. So because her intention was favorable, it is considered bhakti. Although immediately it looked like it was displeasing. So although Krishna was unsatisfied and became angry, this activity was not pleasing to him. So from external point of view, it seems unfavorable. But Mother Yashoda, in her heart, there is no trace or attitude, no trace of an attitude of hostility or desire to displease Krishna in any way. Mother Yashoda is always in a mood of complete agreement towards Krishna, and at every moment she's constantly thinking and very attentive to his welfare. So the milk on the stove was only, she only attended that for the purpose of nourishing Krishna with the idea of Krishna's future benefit. So therefore this action is actually, Mother Yashoda's action is actual bhakti. Interesting. Huh? Immediately she's displeasing him, but it's bhakti. And immediately the wrestlers and demons, Kamsa's associates in Mathura, Chandra, Mushtika, immediately they're pleasing Krishna by hitting him, and he's relishing rasa, and he's happy. It's giving him happiness. But actually, it's not considered bhakti because their mood is to kill Krishna. They're malicious, they're demoniac, they want to kill him. And that's not a mood of love to kill someone. So now, this word anukulyena, which is favorable intention, the word itself actually means, the real meaning of the word is to be completely free from any attitude that is unfavorable or hostile to Lord Sri Krishna. So now, to give a conclusion to this third characteristic of this definition of uttam bhakti, first, that uttam bhakti is only for Krishna. This is the most important of the characteristics, that it's only for Krishna, and bhakti or devotion is the primary, is the most essential characteristic, uttamam bhakti. A pure devotional service is only for Krishna, and it's an active engagement. It's an active engagement. It's not just sit down and meditate. Very active engagement with the body, mind, and words to give pleasure to Krishna. And this can only be done when one contacts the Surup Shakti of the Lord by spiritualizing his body, mind, and senses through the process of initiation. Then it becomes anushilanam, following in the footsteps of the Guru Parampara and pleasing the Lord according to their order and dictation. Then one becomes spiritualized and capable of identifying with the Surup Shakti and giving pleasure to the Lord. Then the third characteristic, or Surup Lakshana of Uttama Bhakti, is that it's anukulyena, which means it's favorable intention, a mood of love and agreement toward the Lord. So this, and there's no hostility. So conclusion of these topics of Surup Lakshana is that devotional activities should be performed for the done for the pleasure to please Krishna, favorable loving intention. If any activity pleases Krishna, but it was not intended to do so, that activity is not bhakti. On the other hand, even action that apparently displeases Krishna can be considered pure devotional service if the intention is loving. Thus, favorable intention is the prime importance in executing devotional service. So it's our mood and our intention, our desires to please Krishna. The intention of the wrestlers, they had no intention to give pleasure to Krishna. They had no intention, yes, let's go make Krishna happy. Come on, boys. Let's go make Krishna really happy. He's our Lord. He's our beloved. We should give pleasure to him. We should do whatever we can to make him happy. Let's go please him in a wrestling match. No, their intention was, we have to kill him. We have to annihilate him. He's obstructing our master's plan to take over Mathura. And he's threatening to kill our master, Kamsa. We have to kill him first. This is the order of our master. We're being paid to kill this boy. Let's annihilate him as soon as we can. Rip him apart. So this was their intention. But then Krishna, when they were hitting him, he said, oh, that feels good. Nice. Achcha. Hit over there. A little scratch over there. Boom. Oh, yeah. So he took it as pleasure, but he took Yashoda's action as displeasure when she put him down, but her intention. So this is the primary importance, is a favorable intention. Now, if we consider this definition of uttam bhakti and how it displays the secondary characteristics, really, what they call the tatastha lakshana. These are the characteristics which serve to distinguish pure devotional service from ordinary devotional service. So there's uttam bhakti, which we're describing here, which is Krishna anushilanam and anafoyena. And then there's something else called not uttam bhakti, which is madhyam bhakti or kanishta bhakti or gyan mishra bhakti or karma mishra bhakti. And sometimes it's called the sarup, or it's called sarup siddha bhakti and arupa siddha bhakti and sangha bhakti, sangha siddha bhakti. Different terms that are used. Krishna Chakravarti Pad and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu to describe these different levels of bhakti. So, ordinary devotional service, that means not uttam bhakti, is activity that's intended to please Krishna. So, like us, we're trying to please Krishna and we have a favorable mood. We're not demons, we're devotees. We have a mood of favorability. And we want to please Krishna, and we're trying to please and satisfy him with our activities, and that's our motive. But there may be some lacking. Our actions may be covered with material desire. We may want something for ourselves, or we may be interested in gyan, or maybe even be tinged with a desire for mukti. Or we're serving Krishna, but in the back of our minds, we want to get out of this world. We want salvation. And we want something for ourselves. So then it's not really uttam bhakti, it's not really pure bhakti. It's called ordinary devotional service, like Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was worshipping Krishna and chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya and standing on one leg. And he was in Vrindavan, we're in Vrindavan. He was in Madhavan, we're in the forest of Vrindavan. He was in Madhavan across the Yamuna near Gokul and doing so many intense austerities and meditating on Vishnu. He was doing bhakti and chanting mantra. We're chanting mantra and we're performing bhakti. But he had material desires. He wanted a kingdom. He wanted a kingdom bigger than his father. He had revenge. He had material revenge. He wanted to show his father off, show him what's my stepmother throwing me on the floor. Wouldn't let me sit on her lap. I'll show my father. I'll throw him out. I'll take over the whole world. So that selfish motivation, that's covered, that's called avritam, covered bhakti. So Rupa Goswami gives a further definition, exacting definition of uttam bhakti, saying that the Swarupa Lakshana, this is what it is, that it's for Krishna, it's anukul, and it's anushilanam. And this is what uttam bhakti isn't. Uttam bhakti isn't mixed with gyan and desire for salvation, and it's not mixed with karma. It's on avritam. It's free from the coverings. These are coverings of pure bhakti. So we may be covered to some extent by these extraneous desires or ambitions. So therefore our bhakti is called... We're doing bhakti, but it's ordinary. It's not extraordinary. It's not uttam. So just as Kapila Muni says in third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, he describes devotional service or tamasic bhakti, rajasic bhakti, and sattvic bhakti. Then there's shuddha bhakti. So there's devotional service. In English we say devotional service tinged by ignorance, devotional service tinged by passion, devotional service tinged by goodness. This is described in Kapila Shiksha in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So here Guru Goswami is alluding to that in this discussion on verse 11 from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Adhyanavritam. So this first line, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Adhyanavritam, describes a tatastha lakshana of uttam bhakti, or the secondary characteristics. So pure devotional service is also uttam bhakti, as distinguished from ordinary devotional service. Is done with proper motivation and also to please Krishna, but it's also free from all ulterior motives and it's not covered by philosophical or fruitive pursuits. It's anya means any other, avilashita, desire, shunyam means this term, anya, vilashita, shunyam means to void, shunya, or free from any motive or any ulterior motive. Prabhupada explains in Nectar Devotion on page Roman numeral 24 like this. He says, any desire except for the service of the Lord is called material desire. Because this term in Sanskrit, abhilash, Abhilash means desire. Like we say, we sing the Tulsi every morning. Radha Krishna Seva Prabhu E Abhilash, right? We say Radha Krishna Seva Prabhu E Abhilash. So Abhilash, O Tulsi Devi, O Brinda Devi, my only Abhilash is the Seva of Radha Krishna. Of course, we sing that, but we don't really mean it. It's just that our lips are saying it, but our mind is saying something else. Oh, Tulsi, my only desire is to serve Radha and Krishna, and to serve my tongue, and to serve my belly, and to serve my wife, and to serve my children, and to serve my country, and to serve my job, and to serve my mind, and to serve my clothes, and to serve my body, and to get fancy clothes, and to get good tapes, and get good music, and get good this, and get good perfumes. And so many things. Oh yeah, by the way, Radha Krishna Seva Pavo Ehi Abhilash Jito Mara Sharanaloy Taravancha Purnoy. So this, again, Rupa Goswami is using the same word. Anya means any other. Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo, Anasteva, 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 Gatir, Anyata. It says Anyata, in the age of Kaliyu, Kalo, there is no other way of spiritual perfection. Harinam, Harinam, Harinam. But chanting the holy name of the Lord. So Anya Bilash means no other desire. Shunya means free from all desire. The only motive, the only desire is to please Krishna. So this is not ordinary bhakti, this is extraordinary bhakti. This is not, very few devotees have this type of bhakti. This is called uttam bhakti. This we are striving for, we are desirous of attaining and trying to work towards life after life. As the karmis say, we're working out our karma. I'm working out my karma. We used to hear this phrase back in the 70s when I was in college. So what is your program? What are you doing? Well, I'm going to college and I'm playing music. Oh, I'm working out my karma. They use this phrase. So devotees trying to gradually progress through bhakti, through ordinary bhakti, to kanishta bhakti, to uttam bhakti, and to come to this pure devotional service. So Prabhupada says in Nectar Devotion, any desire except for the service of Krishna is called material desire. So this word Abhilash means desires. So Rupa, in his word, he says Abhilashita. He says Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. So he adds the word, the suffix ta. So this means something, because it means a category. Because the suffix ta, when we say Abhilash means desire, but Abhilashita, ta means desireness. So this term, Anyabhilashita, this differentiates desire from desireness. Because the word Abhilash, which means desire, includes all desires related to material existence, like our desire to survive, our desire to eat, our desire to evacuate, which means pastoral. One can have these desires, which are basic and integral desires with human life. One can have these desires like this and still not be out of the realm of pure devotional service or uttam bhakti, as long as they are not one's main focus in life. Like they say, we should eat to live, not live to eat. And some people, they say, oh, I love to eat. I love to go on Monday night, I go to a French restaurant. On Tuesday night, I go to an Italian restaurant. On Wednesday night, I go to a French restaurant. And Thursday night, I go to a Vietnamese restaurant. On Friday night, I go to Chinese. And Saturday night, I go to Indian. And I like to go to the different restaurants. And I like, in other words, they're just being controlled by their tongue, desire to eat varieties of foodstuffs. So eating we have to do. Without eating we will perish, we'll be finished. So our main focus in life should not be eating. Although we may desire, even devotees desire, we have to eat something and wear some clothes and survive and exist. But our main desire should be, and it is hopefully, to serve Krishna and to render service, so we can still be, even though we have these desires, it's not wrong. So Abhilashita, the word Anya Abhilashita means desires for sense gratification. We may have desires to live, but we should be free. Anya, have no desires for sense gratification. an example is given here by the Acharyas. Suppose a devotee, he's rendering devotional service and trying to render pure devotional service, and then a tiger comes and he's in a life-threatening situation. His life is in danger. Someone pulls a gun on him, or he's in the jungle and a tiger comes and he says, "Oh!" And he screams out, "Krishna, save me! Krishna, save me! Save me!" He cries out. So this desire, he's expressing a material desire to be saved. So this desire is not for Krishna's pleasure. So this is not bhakti. But it's a desire, a personal desire for self-preservation. But nevertheless, this is an inevitable part of our existence, it does not exclude one from pure devotional service. Because it's just coming up in an emergency situation that we cry out to the Lord to protect us, which is for our pleasure. So that's for a moment that's not really bhakti. But it doesn't exclude us from actually practicing pure devotional service. We're still in the category of anyabhilashita. Because our overall day-to-day existence, we're not doing anything for sense gratification. We're trying to do everything for Krishna's pleasure. So, what's the conclusion? So even if there are extraneous desires, one's motivation must be kept constantly or completely pure. One should desire only to please Krishna and execute pure devotional service. So therefore this anyabhilashita shunya means practicing bhakti for no other purpose than bhakti itself, which means complete freedom from any desire whatsoever than a desire for bhakti. Acting, in other words, we should act for Krishna's pleasure without the least tinge or any desire for any self-benefit in any form. In other words, for example, we're practicing the limbs of sadhana bhakti, like shravanam, kirtanam, hearing and chanting. But we shouldn't think, "Oh, I'll chant so many Vishnu sahasranams, or I'll chant so many lakhs of rounds, and then I'll ask Krishna, please give me this, please give me that. I want this material benediction or this material benefit or reward." That should not be done. We're just chanting to please Krishna. "Oh Krishna, let me chant a lakh of rounds today. It's Ekadasi. It is your special day. Hari Vasara, please be blessed. Please bless me and accept this offering of chanting your holy name. And let me chant purely for your pleasure." Not that, "Oh, I'm going to chant a lakh of rounds. Now please, you give this for me and that for me." Like some sankalpa person before he engages in some yajna or puja, he makes a sankalpa that, "Oh, I want this, I want that. Please give me the result of this yajna or sacrifice." In bhakti, it should be done only for the sake of bhakti, with the objective to attaining. When we perform our bhakti, say sadhana bhakti, we're chanting japa, we're doing puja, we're painting, we're writing, we're speaking, whatever we're doing, we should be doing it with the objective to attain prema bhakti, to attain pure bhava for Krishna. And this, we're trying to please Krishna with the present activity that we're engaging in. So it should be devoid of all other desires than bhakti, than pleasing Krishna. And this becomes uttam bhakti. So this, it says, jnana karma avritam. Avritam means covered, or the other word here is obscured. So it says our practice of devotion or service to Krishna should not be covered by karma or jnana. Because what does jnana mean? Jnana means knowledge of the impersonal Brahman, not knowledge of Krishna. We should have knowledge of Krishna, because without proper understanding of Krishna, his identity and his greatness and his relationship with us, then we won't have a strong foundation to surrender to Krishna without understanding all his qualities and his greatness. So the Vishnu Chakravartipad, when he's discussing knowledge, he describes there's three divisions of jnana. One is called tat padartha jnana. This is knowledge of the constitutional identity of Bhagavan. So tat padartha jnana, T-A-T, padartha jnana. So this means to Krishna tattva. And these are all these different things he writes. Sri Krishna is the absolute truth. He is the param tattva, the supreme, highest truth. He is the non-dual para Brahman. He is the origin of all, without any origin. He is the cause of all, causes, sarvakarana karanam, as Brahma says. Krishna is a repository of all qualities, both Aishvarya, which means majesty, and Madhurya, which means sweetness. He's full of transcendental qualities, which are known in Sanskrit as aprakrita, gun. Krishna is Satchidanandamaya, vigraha. He's the embodiment of existence, cognizance, and bliss. He is the abode of all rasa. He's adept in enjoying rasa vaisaha. Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, and he's the ultimate object to be realized by all the Vedas and all Shastras. This kind of knowledge is called Tadpadartha Gyan. So that's good kind of knowledge. So what Vishnu is telling you, that this knowledge we should aspire for, that's why we have Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Vaibhav and Bhakti Vedanta and Vaichi and all these study and classes and seminars to attain this Krishna Tattva, this knowledge of Krishna. How is he doing everything and what is our relationship? It's very important. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati explains that the first duty of a spiritual master is to enrich his disciple with knowledge about the greatness of Krishna. You know, the Purusha avatars and the creation and all these, how God is great. Because if the guru immediately takes the disciple by the hand and introduces him to Ras Lila and the intimate pastimes of the Lord with the gopis in Vrindavan and in the bushes of Vrindavan, as Prabhupada says in one place, then that devotee will misunderstand the Lord as being something mundane and something ordinary. Oh, he's a human like me. He has girlfriends and he goes in the bushes with his girlfriends and goes in the park. He can't be God. First we must know about the godhood, the grandeur, the pomp, the supremacy of the Lord must be firmly realized and understood by thorough study of Gita and Bhagavatam and Upanishads before we venture to deal with the intimate human-like pastimes or Naralila of the Lord. It's very important to have this foundation. So what we just mentioned is Tatpadartha Gyan. This type of Gyan does not cover bhakti. This actually uncovers bhakti. This strengthens bhakti and supports bhakti and protects bhakti, makes bhakti strong. Another kind of knowledge is called Tvam, T-W-A-M, Tvam Padartha Gyan. This means knowledge of the constitutional identity of the jiva and its relationship with Bhagavan. The jivas are atomic particles of living spirit, Chit Paramanu Swarup. Chit Paramanu Swarup. Infinitesimal rays of the Supreme Spirit, Sri Krishna. Jivas are Anu Chaitanya. Anu means atomic. We have Vidu and Anu. Anur Aniyan Mahatomi Mahiyan. Krishna is bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. So the jivas are Anu Chaitanya. Chaitanya means Chaitanya means living spirit or living consciousness. They are atomic particles of consciousness, whereas Krishna is Vibhu Chaitanya, all-pervading great consciousness. Jivas are controlled by Maya, and Krishna is the controller of Maya. Jiva's relationship with Krishna is one of inconceivable, simultaneous oneness and difference. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy of Chinchi Veda Veda Tattva. Because the jiva is part and parcel of Krishna, and because he has a tendency to serve the Lord, which is inherent in his nature, the jiva's relationship with Krishna is that the jiva is the eternal servant. This type of knowledge is called Tvam Padartha Gyan. So this is not avritam. This does not cover or obscure bhakti. This is the basis of bhakti. It's called Sambandha Gyan. Yep. Sambandha Gyan or Sambandha Tattva, Abhideya Tattva, Prayojana Tattva. So this Sambandha means relationship. The basis of relationship is this understanding who I am. Who am I? What is my identity? What is my size? What is my origin? What is my relationship? Who is God? How do we interact? What is our dynamics of our relationship? Who am I and who is he? This is Sambandha. The third type of knowledge is called Jiva Brahma Aikya Gyan, or sometimes called Nirvishesh Gyan. This is knowledge of the oneness of the Jiva and Brahma and Brahman. Obviously, this type of knowledge is opposed to bhakti. But Tatpadartha Gyan and Tvampadartha Gyan are not opposed to bhakti. When ignorance is dissipated, the jiva becomes identical with the sarup of Brahma. At that time, the jiva has no separate existence. In jiva Brahma Aikya Gyan, There is no chance for the jiva's natural relationship with the Supreme Lord as a servant and served can ever arise. The attitude of savior, sevaka, bhav, servant and served, is the very life of bhakti. Therefore, to remain free from any taint of nirvishesh brahma jnana is the tatastha, which means the gona, lakshana, or secondary characteristic of uttama bhakti. So it says, jnana karmadi ramritam. So our bhakti, our uttam bhakti, should not be covered by this type of nirvishesh jnana, the knowledge of oneness, but it should be revealed by the proper knowledge of the true knowledge of the jiva's relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Then the second is karma. So the word karma in the verse, jnana karmadi amritam, it refers to the smarta karmas, like these are called naimittic karmas. These are daily and occasional duties, like shraddha ceremony or pinda, homas and worshiping different devas, Durga Puja, and all these different kinds of rituals are mentioned in the Vedas for human beings, but they actually cover bhakti, they dilute bhakti. And this, because these are what they call karma mishra, that you're mixing your bhakti with these different types of practices because of attachment to the devatas, especially prevalent in India. People are afraid to give up their Monday fast, and they're afraid to stop worshipping Durga, or she might get angry with me if I concentrate fully on worshipping Krishna to the exclusion of all others. So then it says karma jnana adi amrita. So this word adi, it means to, refers to ashtanga yoga, and adi means and beginning with or all others. Other forms of renunciation which are not helpful for bhakti. So there's some discussion. They said that we can still engage in ordinary social and religious activities, but such engagements should not become more prominent than our engagement in direct bhakti. If such activities overshadow our attention to devotional activities such as hearing and chanting, they will cover our devotional attitude and disqualify us from pure devotional service. This idea.